Monster Man, episode 344, Roper and Saberclaw.
Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games.
In today's episode, we'll be continuing our journey through the Monsters section of Creature Catalog, the 1986 supplement for Basic Dungeons & Dragons. Before we do that, though, it's time to take care of some business. First, I want to thank a new Patreon supporter. Yes, this is someone who's gone to patreon.com/monsterman, and they've pledged as little as $1 to help support the show. And if, like today's patron, you pledge at the $2 level or higher, you'll also get access to my other podcast, Patron Deities, in which I take a look at the Deities and Demigods supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition, and how to use it and religion and mythology more generally in your fantasy role-playing games. So thank you very much to today's new supporter, Paul Spraggett, or possibly Spraget. Paul, I'm very glad that you're enjoying the show enough to want to support it. Thanks a lot for your pledge. Just as another quick reminder, the Pamphlet of Pantheons, my Zine Quest 3 project, goes live on Thursday, the 11th of February, 2021. I'll put a link in the show notes, and if you follow that, you can sign up to be notified when it begins. Okay, first up, let's talk about the Roper. Now, the Roper is one of those monsters that I don't have much to say about in its creature catalog incarnation, because it's basically a direct translation of its appearance in the Monster Manual. So we've already covered this monster. It is an AD&D monster appearing in a D&D form. I will say that the Roper is an unusual case because most of the overlap between the two games is in the box sets, right? Most of it is giants and orcs and dragons and skeletons and wolves and what have you, right? Is real kind of core fantasy concepts. There are comparatively few AD&D standard monsters whose D&D incarnation is not in a core set. In fact, the Roper has sort of an interesting history in this regard. So the reason that the Roper is in the creature catalog is, like a lot of other monsters, it is being translated over directly from a module. And the module in this case is the Quest for the Heartstone. Now, we've seen Quest for the Heartstone monsters previously. I think the Dragon is another example of it. The Quest for the Heartstone is the module that was published to go along with the Advanced Dungeons & Dragons action figures, which included a Roper. And I assume that that's because it was, you know, the right combination of an easy design to make and something that TSR could copyright or trademark or whatever it is. I'm not a lawyer. The distinction in the 80s between Dungeons & Dragons and Advanced Dungeons & Dragons continues to feel a little unclear to me. So this is an Advanced Dungeons & Dragons figure being promoted with a Dungeons & Dragons module. Who knows? I have come to the conclusion that the reason that it feels confusing to me, maybe confusing is the wrong word, it's just ambiguous. And it was ambiguous at the time. Different editors, different writers, different TSR people probably had different views of like the appropriate relationship between the company's two flagship games. You know, they have different ideas about how interconnected they're supposed to be. And I suspect that for most people, they were effectively pretty interconnected. Although, I don't know who's playing both AD&D and D&D. Maybe I'm just sort of imagining it wrong. If I was in a gaming group and they said, we want to play AD&D, I'd say, sure, we'll play whatever you like. And then if they wanted to play D&D, I'd say, sure, we'll play whatever you like. So I might find myself in one group that played AD&D and another that played D&D. You can imagine being in a group and on Tuesdays you play D&D and on Saturdays you play Call of Cthulhu, but it's very hard to imagine a group playing D&D and AD&D. It seems like you would just prefer one or the other. Maybe I'm wrong. You know, I wasn't there. Or I was. I mean, it's not like I wasn't gaming in the late 80s. I was just playing Marvel superheroes and Tunnels and Trolls. Our next creature is the Saberclaw. Saberclaws are bat-like demonic creatures that attack in swarms. The eponymous Saberclaw is a huge sword-like claw that they have in place of one arm. I actually wrote in my notes, I called them Saber Wing, but it's actually Saber Claw. And Saber Wing, I think, comes from the Dark Wing, which is also a sort of gargoyle-y looking creature, which is inexplicably in the humanoids chapter. Saberclaws are an example of a type of monster that I think is quite important, but that maybe is like the type that I'm least qualified to comment on, because the Saberclaw is a monster that is primarily interesting from a mechanical perspective. Saberclaw wings, as they're called, wings as in like a wing of aircraft, consist of, you know, 1d20 Saberclaws, and they are treated as single large monsters. So their hit points are treated as kind of a big collective whole, and individual Saberclaws die when the wing, as it were, takes that level of damage. They're also highly resistant to low-level spells, so they're immune to spells of third level or below. They have very good saves when they're in their wing together. And because they're treated as having the hit dice of the whole wing. A typical Saberclaw has 5 hit dice, but a wing of 10 Saberclaws would have 50 hit dice for purposes of determining what its saves are. And they have true sight, which allows them to see through invisibility and things. So when I started reading this, I thought, I don't get the distinction, because individual Saberclaws do die when you do that level of damage. So if we assume that a typical Saberclaw has 25 hit points, then if you do 30 damage to the swarm, one of the Saberclaws dies, and the swarm's hit point total reduces by 30. Initially, I thought, I don't get why this matters. Because, again, mechanics are not really my strong suit. My understanding, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong, is that the important part here is, let's say that you are fighting 25 hit point Saberclaws, and you were doing 38 points of damage per attack. You make your first attack, you hit a Saberclaw, you do 38 points of damage, it dies. You make your second attack, you hit a Saberclaw, you do 38 points of damage, it dies. You have just done 76 points of damage, enough to kill 3 Saberclaws, but you've only killed 2, because the excess damage is wasted. So this is a bit of a disadvantage for characters who don't have area of effect attacks, but do a lot of damage. So fighter types, particularly at the comparatively high levels that you're going to encounter Saberclaws. Heroic literature has fighter types cleaving their way through immense hordes, right? Just fighting their way through swarms of goblins or whatever, or even lesser men. But actually, the way the D&D rules work, it doesn't quite work like that. In fact, getting bogged down in large numbers of crummy small opponents is something that can be really annoying for high-level combat characters. Back when I played a paladin, I mean, this is in 5th, which is a whole other kettle of fish, but back when I played a paladin, that was certainly the case that, you know, laboriously bashing in a bunch of lesser bad guys was one of the problems that a paladin can face. They were unlikely to hit me with my high armor class, they probably couldn't do enough damage to really hurt me, but they could keep me busy for a long period of time while their friends, you know, swarmed the wizard. It's not a bad strategy, but it's also not, like, a ton of fun. It's not a very exciting or compelling fight. Their optimal strategy was to impose sluggish boredom on me. So I feel like also the Saberclaws are built to be comparatively resistant to wizards who are powerful at the levels that Saberclaws are going to be encountered. This kind of counters some of the basic shenanigans, like invisibility or whatever, that a wizard might use to not have to fight 80 flying devil monsters. So it seems like some concerns about what's going on at high-level play are manifest in the design of this monster. They want to kind of encourage fighters and similar characters to feel heroic and discourage wizards from just spell-blasting large numbers of foes out of the way. They come from a module called CM3, Saber River. That's a companion-level module, CM, and I suspect that that explains some of the oddities in terms of their powers and their immunities. Whenever I see a D&D monster whose mechanical profile has a bunch of weird immunities, I just sort of assume that there is some kind of well-known wizard strategy that I'm not aware of. In many ways, Creature Catalog has some of the qualities of Monster Manual 2 and even Fiendfolio, in that, unlike Monster Manual, it is being developed in response to an active play culture. So there are some monsters here that are included as solutions to what are perceived to be common problems in the play experience. Okay, that's about all the monsters that we have time for today. In our next episode, we're doing a special episode, and we're going to take a look at monstrous cities full of monsters. How do you make them accessible? How do you make them compelling? What sort of things might you find in them? And then at the end of the week, we got another special coming up, this one more about a villain than about a monster. So I hope you'll join me for both of those right here on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening.
If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.